IRS on the Road, value-based parenting and life balance ideas from world-traveling family coaches. Here's Richard and Linda Iyer.
Welcome back to IRS on the Road. We have been on the road this morning, actually.
Yeah, just running
for several hours already. Yeah, but it is great to be with you. Thank you for joining us wherever you are. Cleaning your garage or walking home from somewhere, wherever it is. Isn't the internet amazing?
Cleaning your garage. Where did that come from?
I was thinking about our garage. It really needs to be cleaned.
You want me, you're going to send me out to clean the garage, aren't you? That was your way of leading into it subtly.
It was. We're inviting our whole family to clean our garage because we have.
There's no garage left.
So much stored from their college days, their high school days, the putt that they finally scored in hockey. We have everything we can possibly want out in our garage.
Well, and we were talking just before we went on the air about, you know, we've got so many things happening right now that are so important in our lives, and they're related in many, many cases to our church and our faith. And we were just reflecting on how way back 14 years ago when we started this podcast, we were really sensitive because we at that time we were speaking all over the world, and we had just learned that you have to be really careful not to be too upfront about your faith and your religion, lest you might offend someone or lest you might have someone might think, well, you know, this is. Because a lot of our speaking was to very secular audiences, but we were just thinking how we've sort of dropped that caution. We figure those of you who have been with us on IRS on the Road for a long time pretty much know that we're delighted to be members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and our family culture is intertwined inexorably with that church's culture. And that's where we were today was with one of four. We have four grandsons who are all going on LDS missions within a month of each other. And they're all going to Spanish-speaking missions. So they're all going to the Missionary Training Center in Mexico City. And they'll all be there once. They'll all overlap there.
For just a week. All four be there.
One's going to Guatemala, one to Mexico City, one to Oaxaca, and one to Puerto Rico. And we had a great, just great couple of days this week with all four of them, just riding, going horseback riding, going sailing, but talking all the whole time, all the whole 2 days. About what it's like to do missionary work, what it's like to be a full-time volunteer and do humanitarian work and proselyting and all these things 24/7 for 2 years.
Well, and we had a lot of object lessons as we went along because we did have a lovely horse ride up at the top of Logan Canyon, for any of you know where that is. But we were on six horses with a cute guide who took us up. But this one horse, I guess, had been on three trail rides already that day, and it just decided right at the top that it was just going to lay down and have a rest.
With luckily, one of our grandsons on it.
And luckily, he's quick on his feet. He jumped off, and we petted him a little bit, and then he stood back up. And
he went off.
But that's the way missions are, right? Unexpected something happens every day, unexpected.
Good point. Yeah. Everything was a metaphor, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
And also today, our subject matter for the podcast is going to be very connected to our theology, to what we believe, because we've just started a series of articles. It's going to be every week, every weekend for the whole summer. I know that sounds ambitious, but we love to publish with a magazine called Meridian Magazine. And we've decided that actually, I've kind of decided because Linda's got a full plate this summer, but I'm going to do the writing. I'm going to be the scribe, but they're really articles are really coming from us. And they are no surprise to you listeners. It's no surprise that our focus is going to be on families and on family relationships and on ancestors and on connections, connecting with family and so on. But we're doing it through a gospel lens. And, or another way to say it is we're going to be talking about what we believe is Christ's gospel, but through a family lens, because we've really come to believe, for what it's worth, and this will be a little more clear when we share some excerpts with you in a minute, but we've really come to believe that the gospel of Jesus Christ can't be fully understood until you see it through a family lens, through the connections of family that work. And by the same token, a family can't be really fully and in depth appreciated unless it's looked at through a Christian lens, through a gospel lens, through a divine lens.
A divine lens is better. Because before you launch into this, I have to say that we, in our travels, we have learned to love Muslims, Hindus, Sikhs. There's so Buddhists. Many Buddhists. Yes, so many religions, and a special religion in Bali that's a little different than anywhere in the world. But they're all family-oriented. It's so interesting.
They
sometimes
really are.
More than us. I mean, when we go into a home in Bali, they have their ancestors' ashes on a beautiful little display in the house, and they pray not to them, but they pray there every day. They respect their ancestors. They have ancestor celebrations all the time. I think sometimes people outside the church do a better job with ancestors than we do.
Do you think, honey, I've never thought of it in the form of a question, but had it not been for 20 to 25 years of intense traveling and speaking around the world in more than 60 countries, had it not been for that, would we have the same love? You used the word love. Would we have the same love and connection to other faiths as we do now?
No, obviously. That's the real pleasure in traveling and seeing people working their religion.
Because the way most of our speaking was and still is, but we do so much less of it now, we'd always have a host. And the host was usually a couple, and we'd get to know their family. And if we were in China, perhaps they were Buddhist. If we were in Romania, maybe they were, they were Orthodox Christian. So we got exposed to so
much. Well, in Saudi, there were 3 or 4 generations of family living in the same house. They just kept building bigger and bigger houses.
Yeah.
They just couldn't imagine living on their own until one time we went, and you remember that one family said, We're all separating for a year until we can build a bigger house. And actually, we kind of like having room time for ourselves. But
that's what they were.
Yeah, but it is amazing that people believe in family everywhere, all over the world. But we do have some wonderful insights that we want to share with you today that just enhances what they're doing with their families.
So this is the first... it's actually published today on Meridian Magazine. If you want to read it, just put in your browser Meridian Magazine. The actual URL is LatterdaySaintMag.com.
Yeah, that's
but
better.
But if you just put in Meridian Magazine, it'll go right
to
that.
I can get it.
Oh, really?
There just now, yeah. Latter-day.
Well, LatterdaySaintMag.com. And the cover story this week is this first is sort of introductory article to this series that we're going to be doing every weekend throughout the summer. We kind of think summer is a time when a lot of families are together more than usual, and perhaps they're more focused on how they're doing in their families and so on. So, and by the way, Linda, we want to say that we one reason we publish on this particular online magazine is we really love the publishers, Scott and Marianne Proctor. They're just such good friends.
They are wonderful. And they do a podcast every week for Come Follow Me, if any of you want another, get another Come Follow Me. But they are fabulous. They have done tours with people for so many years, all through the Holy Land, all through church history land. They, you name it, they've been there. It's been amazing.
So, Linda, since you are so connected to Maureen, let me have you read the editor's note that precedes this series, and that will give people kind of an overview of what we're trying to write on and what we're going to share some of the introductory article today.
So this is our dear Maureen. And we love Scott, too, but this just happens to be written by her.
Well, we wrote it with them, but it's okay. Their editor's note.
We are pleased to present this once a week, all summer long series of articles from Linda and Richard Iyer. As most Meridian readers know, the Iyers for five decades have focused their professional lives on strengthening families. This focus has ranged from writing New York Times number one best-selling books to speaking to parents in more than 60 countries around the globe. But their true passion is for an inclusive, eternal family paradigm that can't be fully shared or grasped without the insights of the restored gospel.
Let me just interject. That's what I was trying to say earlier, is that even though we speak around the world on family, we don't feel like we can get to the deepest level without incorporating the gospel of Jesus Christ.
The goal of this series of essays is more fully integrated family and gospel, is to have a more fully integrated family and gospel, helping us each to better understand both. Family is broadly defined so that each article speaks to us all, whether we're single or married, parents or siblings, aunts and uncles or grandparents.
So you get the idea.
I do have to say, you have to add on what you added on. And that is that you have really written this. This is coming out of your brain. We talk about them. No.
Let me read. This is my note. I am the voice for these essays, but you need to know that every concept I will try to express in this series was co-created with Linda. Her summer plate is a bit fuller than mine. That's the truth.
Yes,
so I'm the scribe. But these articles come from both of our minds and both of our hearts. Let us invite you to join us here each weekend this summer to focus on a new facet of how church connects with family and how family connects with church. So that's what we're undertaking. And you may say, wow, how many articles? Well, there will be at least 12, one every weekend for the summer. And I think it takes that many to really do this subject justice. It really does. And so we're going to read you a little part of it before we go to the break that will kind of give you an idea of where we're going with the whole series. Well, let's read every other paragraph here just for a minute. Our president of our church, Russell M. Nelson, said and frequently reiterates that the restored gospel is, quote, home-centered, church-supported. Thus, to fully understand the gospel, we need to think in family-centric terms.
Or said another way, to grasp the essence of the restoration, we need to think from the perspective of eternal family, both theirs and ours. Come to think of it, our prophet frequently says that too, in the simplest, most direct way. Think celestial.
Wait, hold it. Please don't anyone stop reading right now or listening because, quote, I'm not a parent or I don't have a family, or let's just not define family that narrowly. We all have families. We're all part of families. We're all children in God's family. We are cousins and aunts and uncles, siblings, children, grandchildren. It's important that we define family broadly. I just hate the idea of dividing people. Oh, you're single and I'm married. I mean, clearly there are lifestyle differences, but we're all part of families. And the more we find in unifying ourselves, and you know, it's interesting that polls show that those who aren't married assume they will be. Like 90% of people think at some point in their life they will probably start their own family. But even before they do, or even if they don't, they are part of families and of the family of God.
And you know, our church now is more than half of our population are unmarried, single. And I don't know if that includes people who have lost spouses or not, but there are a lot of young people and a lot of unmarried people. So it is important to remember that they are still part of the family.
Absolutely, honey. Now, before we take a little break, and then we're going to really get into this in the second half, but let me read you this one last paragraph here in this particular section. Believing in and thinking of God as parental rather than as sovereign can change everything. It changes how deeply we feel his love. It helps us understand that we are not just his creations, but his children, and that we are not just Christ's subjects, but his siblings. A little alliteration there, but I think the key is one of the whole goals of this series is to suggest that to really understand God's love and to really feel his love, we need to think of him as a father. And in our case, to believe in both a heavenly father and a heavenly mother, then everything becomes familial, everything becomes parental, everything becomes relationship oriented. And it's so much different than just thinking of an all-powerful creator God.
Okay, so that gives you quite a lot to think about. Well, we take a little break here and we'll be right back.
Welcome back to Iyer's on the Road. Here's Richard and Linda Iyer.
And we're back. We're pretty deep today. And it's good to think deeply sometimes. And sometimes we don't think deeply enough, but we hope you're with us.
And speaking of thinking deeply, let us present a metaphor that I think really resonates with a lot of people. And we're going to read part of it from this introductory article. And it has to do with a three-act play. We see existence. We see the full of eternity as a three-act play. And let us just kind of try to share what we mean by that. Why don't we read, starting right... Well, let's give credit where credit is due. There's a leader of our church named Boyd K. Packer. Nearly 30 years ago is the first one I remember using this metaphor of eternity as a three-act play. And so here now on this mortal earth, we exist in the short, pivotal middle act of this play, with the first act being the pre-mortal world stretching out forever behind us. And that is a distinctive teaching of our particular faith, that we lived before we came to this earth with our heavenly parents, and that this earth was actually created for us. So here in this second act, we are living out this mortal section, kind of a short middle act of the play, which then goes into the third act, which is the forever forward of the hereafter, of heaven, of whatever we perceive the life after death to be. And so don't you love that as a way of thinking about it?
Yeah, it really puts things into perspective. And we're just thinking today about what would happen when we die. We were in our temple, and it was pretty amazing to think about. It blows your mind. There's no way you can figure it out, but it's such a different existence than we have now. And I think we sometimes don't appreciate what we have here. And maybe it'll be more fun there. I don't know. But anyway, it is interesting to put that into three categories.
Well, and here, let me go even one little step deeper. We feel like this second act of this eternal play has three scenes. And that's how when we go to Broadway, right, there can be an act which can have three scenes in it.
Sure, they change the scenery.
Scene changes. And so we perceive that this middle act actually has three scenes. One is this mortal earth. Two is what we call a spirit world, where we go after we die, where we're different, but we're still ourselves and we're continuing to learn. And then we perceive of something called the millennium, 1,000 years that the Bible talks about, where Christ will actually reign on the earth. And all of that second act with mortality, the spirit world, and the millennium happens before the judgment and the resurrection, which then leads into the third act, which is eternal. And so I just really like that kind of comparison. And the thing we're trying to get to here that we'll move deeply into in some of these articles is that it's such a positive thing to think about the family as the thing that is eternal, not the church. And that's no disrespect to our church or any church. Churches, mosques, synagogues, they help us to focus on morality. They help us to focus on eternity. They help us to think more broadly and hopefully help us to have better relationships with our fellow man.
Yeah, how to straighten out our lives when we do things wrong. There's just so much that it helps us with.
And so what we're trying to do is to say that's powerfully important. And of course, Christ is the most important of all in our view. But we like to think of Christ not as the end, but as the means to the end. It's his sacrifice and his church and his gospel that hopefully gets us from where we are now to where we want to be, whatever our perception is of heaven. In our case, it's living again with our heavenly parents. And when we think of the church in that way, it becomes something that helps us and guides us and isn't something that judges us. I have a friend who puts it this way, and this is actually in the next article that we're going to talk about next week, but he says, we don't want to think of this earth as a courtroom. We want to think of it as a classroom.
Oh, I like that.
I really like that.
Because people always think they're being judged, or they judge themselves, or, you know, and that's such a heavy feeling. Worrying if people are judging what you're doing or how you look or anything like that. But it is really fascinating to think about it as a classroom. We're just learning how to respond to the way people respond to us.
And I know it's an incomplete metaphor or comparison, but parents understand that in the sense that we send our children away. When they're old enough, when we think our children are mature enough, they've finished high school, we normally send them away to college, right? Because we have come to understand that their growth, if they continue to live with us forever, is limited. They need to be on their own. They need to have agency. They need to have independence. They need to be able to make choices. And we believe that in a much more magnificent and macro way, our heavenly parents send us away to this university, if you will, this school, this orbiting mortal earth, where we have infinite freedom, infinite agency, infinite independence. And it took a lot of courage for our heavenly parents to do that, just as it takes courage for us to send our kids away to college. We know there'll be opposition. We know there'll be temptation. We know there'll be pain. We know there'll be suffering. And we believe God knew that about us. But he also knew that without it, without that independence and that agency, our growth was limited.
Well, I think it's a time when we have to work through things. I mean, this morning, I did a disastrous thing.
You thought it was a disaster.
I sent this email out to a lot of people who had to send it out to a lot of people, and it had the wrong email address on it. And it was my fault because I had taken it out and put it back in and didn't copy it exactly. Anyway, no one should ever trust me with things like that.
We were driving in the car back from being in this temple ceremony with one of these four missionaries, and Linda suddenly, I knew something was wrong because you basically threw your computer up in the air in the seat next to me, and I sent the wrong email. But anyway, what were you going to?
Well, I'm saying that's the way life is. You just, first of all, you think it's a disaster. It's absolutely, you can't fix it. And then you realize, well, yeah, I can fix it. In most cases, sometimes you can't fix it. You have to just go on and do better. But this one, I could fix. It took a lot of time and it took a lot of emails and a lot of I'm sorries, but I did fix it. I mean, I think that's what we're here for, is to make mistakes.
Learn to fix ourselves.
Make mistakes and learn to fix it. And we have to fix ourselves in so many ways, you know, what people think of us or what we think of people. We need to change our mind every day. It's really, really important. And that's the classroom.
That's the classroom. I agree. So let's read a little more. Let's read sort of the conclusion of this introductory article to give you a little clearer picture of where we're going and why we'll be talking about this in some of the weeks to come. So let's alternate paragraphs. Just as this church, or just as a church or divine perspective helps and supports us in connecting our families, so also a clear family perspective and priority can help us to understand and stay committed to our faith or to our religion. the means and end paradigm can take some of the angst out of our personal doubts and fears.
When we think of the church, not as the end that measures us, but as the means that supports us and our families, we start to become more inclined to accept and receive and less inclined to criticize and judge, which I was just talking about.
Yeah, that ties right into what you were saying.
Yeah, we understand that it is not the church, but our families that are eternal. And we look for and welcome the support and help and backup that we can receive from our wards, from the temple, from the insights of the restoration.
So it's like, you know, we know people who feel the church is judging them all the time. So as a result, they kind of judge the church. They'll find fault, or they'll say, well, I had a bishop once who wasn't very nice to me, or I heard something in church the other day that was wrong. And you know, so they feel judged by the church and they want to judge the church. But if we change our paradigm a little and we say, wait, the church is there to support us. It's to help our families. It's to give us backup as we raise our children. It's to give us faith when life gets hard. It's a tool. It's a wonderful gift to us. And, you know, yeah, there may be some problems with it, but, you know, it's like you've got a car that has a low tire. So you decide to throw the car away, or do you, you know, find a way to pump up the tire and keep it? Do we keep our faith? Do we keep our belief? So,
and sometimes even in the church, people do make mistakes.
Sure, of course they do.
We've all made mistakes in the church, but we can't take that as meaning that everything's all wrong.
And that's exactly where the article goes. The next paragraph says, in this context, finding something in church history that bothers us or that we don't understand, or having a bishop that makes a mistake, or not liking a statement about gay people, or Joseph's interpretation of hieroglyphics, or apparent inconsistencies between scriptural history and DNA testing, all these things that bother us that we're not quite sure or totally accurate or whatever. But each of those becomes less disturbing or threatening in this context of, wait, the church is human. It's run by humans. Humans make mistakes. That's not the point. The point is it helps us. It can help our kids. It can help our families. It can be a support mechanism to us. It can bolster our faith. Let's accept all the good that comes from our faith, whatever that faith is, instead of judging it too much. So we understand the humanness of church administration and leaders and the imperfections of the lay ministry that we are all part of. And we understand that what matters is how much the church and its doctrines and covenants and programs and perspectives, how much those can help us to believe in and understand Christ. That's the real measurement. Can the church help us more deeply understand and follow Christ? And how much it can help and support and supplement our own families and guide us in our return journey to our heavenly parents. And then you get the paragraph that starts with the bottom
line. The bottom line, the church and the restoration helps us understand the eternal nature of family and the goal of exaltation. And the family paradigm that results helps us understand the invaluable but temporary support nature of the church. Taken together, blended and connected, they make both church and family less stressful and more enjoyable.
So the point of these 12 essays, of which this is the first one, is to try to expand on these themes and to try to add both the nuances of perspective and the specifics of implementation. So some of them are going to be what we always do, which is ideas for stronger families and, you know, ways to connect better with our kids and ways to connect our kids with our ancestors and all those things that you've heard us talk about for so long. But they're going to be blended with, I don't want to use the word theological because we're certainly not theologians, but they're going to be blended with the faith that we feel probably all of our listeners have to some degree. We, you know, as Americans, we live in the most believing country on earth. We're over 90% of Americans say they believe in some form of higher intelligence or God. And so whether you are of the same faith as we or not, we think that these articles and what we're going to talk about to expand them are going to be relevant to all of us because A, we all have families, we're all part of families, we're all part of God's family, and B, we are all trying to find truth in our lives.
And C, we've all made mistakes and we all have family members that we're worried about, and life is long. And there's a long time that we have to figure all that out and come to a really interesting and fun conclusion.
We've just hit some of the highlights of this introductory article. So if you've got time today, either put in your browser Meridian Magazine and go where it tells you, or if you don't get it, LatterdaySaintMag.com and read the article, and then you'll see where we're going with this series. But we love doing this podcast every week. We love you for listening.
And thanks for hanging with us. We appreciate you so much. And we hope to see you next time on Ayers on the Road.
Bye till then.